Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of the Nation Podcast, where we'll be talking about immigration reform. I'm George Zornick, Washington reporter with the Nation.
And I'm Bryce Covert, blogger with The Nation.
And we're joined by another wonderful Nation contributor, Aura Bogado, who has been covering this debate closely, has several pieces up at thenation.com, which you can check out. Aura, thanks for joining us. Let's just get this started. Obviously, this is going to be a big year for immigration reform. It's going to be the political focus, I think, for much of the year, certainly here in Washington, much as healthcare reform took over 2010. I mean, just at first blush on the top level, you know, what do you think the prospects are here for good immigration reform? And briefly, what do you think that would look like?
Well, it's really going to hinge on the House. We know that the Senate's Gang of Eight has their blueprint. It differs in some important ways from the White House proposal, which Obama has made clear he's going to send down if Congress can't get itself together and actually work on, propose, and pass a bill. Cecilia Munoz yesterday made clear that that would happen in the next 2 months if Congress doesn't go ahead and pass something on its own. In the House, we're seeing a lot of competing narratives of what immigration reform is going to look like. While people like Senator Marco Rubio have made clear that there will be some type of pathway to citizenship, Eric Cantor, House Majority Leader, has basically countered that. He's starting to focus a lot more on the most sort of sympathetic common ground on this debate, which are the Dreamers, the undocumented youth who were brought here by their parents. So the idea is they're here by no fault of their own. They're contributing, they're going to school, and we want to provide a space in which they can have some type of status. What that ignores is that all of these children are here because of their parents, and those youth don't want to lose their parents in this focus, don't want to make their parents deportable or excluded from any upcoming legislation. So I think what we might see is this entire debate really hinging on the House.
And what, you know, you've done a lot of great reporting on the activist community. Where is the red line? Where is the point after which, you know, a path to citizenship isn't really that and is thus not worth supporting?
So Representative Trey Gowdy yesterday talked about this idea of forced citizenship. He apparently has this notion that a lot of undocumented workers don't feel like they actually want citizenship, and a bill is going to somehow force citizenship on them. This isn't anything that I've gauged from my many years of immigration reporting. What people want is not just some type of status that gives them perhaps some kind of temporary status, but they want something that's permanent. These are, you know, people who have been here for decades, have purchased homes, have contributed to the economy, have raised their families here, and they want a chance to actually have full citizenship and to know that they're not deportable. And so I think that that's going to be a really hard line. Another hard line, and we are sort of seeing a split within the activist circles, is the idea of LGBT partnership inclusion or exclusion in any upcoming legislation. We're seeing that some groups are saying, well, we can reunite families and sort of ignore LGBT partners, and others are saying, no, we have to include LGBT partners as part of any upcoming reform.
On the path to citizenship, too, I'm curious about how activists and reformers are feeling about the talk around going to the back of the line. Because on the one hand, you know, we've been trying to enact comprehensive immigration reform, it feels like, for a very long time. So it would be very exciting, I would think, to see something actually happen. On the other hand, you know, the back of the line can be decades. You know, is there a hard line there, and is there a feeling of what people can live with?
Yeah, and you know, that's a great question. I have been trying to find the back of the line, and which line is it that you're talking about? A lot of times it depends on whether you entered with a visa or not. If you entered with a visa waiver, as some people did about 10 or 12 years ago, if you are a student, if you are a young person who didn't have the opportunity to join the military or go to school, there's so many sort of different, there's very many lines, and they all take a long time to get to the front of it. And, of course, a lot of the rhetoric is centered on the fact that there are people who have done everything right, have applied for certain visas, are here trying to do it, you know, in a legal way with attorney's assistance, et cetera. And so the fear is that sort of this 11 million people will cut to the front of the line and get immediate citizenship. I don't think that's really a reasonable fear. I think that whatever will be coming up will definitely take a long time, and we know that immigration is one of these bureaucracies in which there really are a lot of people that are applying both legally and anything that's coming up. It's hard to even do the work of processing 11 million people through any kind of program. And so I think what people are looking for is some kind of immediate relief with a chance to apply through the proper channels, to do a background check, et cetera, to pay whatever fines, which sort of was a harder line in the past. Learning English has been a harder line in the past. We're sort of seeing some of the activist groups, if not conceding, they're not really talking about that very much. But I think that it's a process that, you know, if it is enacted by Congress, if we do get some kind of comprehensive immigration reform, we're still looking at a few years here on out to even do a background check without the promise of any kind of citizenship for 11 million people takes a really long time. It takes a lot of resources. And so I think it's something that may take, you know, 5 years or so. What people don't want to see is something that's going to take 20 years, that's going to take 30 years, or that will give them some kind of temporary status and won't promise citizenship at all.
Right. That's interesting about the fees, too, because obviously, it from what I've been reading, the fees can be really quite heavy. And there's also a lot of requirements that are being talked about, like proving your work history, which is difficult for those who work in the shadow economy in, you know, agricultural labor or domestic labor. So it's interesting to see where those battle lines are being drawn, because some of the poorer immigrants may, in fact, be excluded if the fees are really high, I would think. And so you're saying that that's sort of something that's faded to the background a little bit?
I think we'll see it come back up for sort of obvious reasons. The pathway to citizenship remains sort of the central concern. I would say second to that among activists right now is the LGBT partnership recognition. I think that as the conversation continues, we'll see fees come back up. We'll see this, the fees and fines come back up, right? We'll see the English requirement come back up because, you know, as you just noted, for a lot of the poorer workers, you know, people who are working 12, 14 hours a day in the field, 6 or sometimes 7 days a week, it's very difficult to learn English. You know, for any of us who have learned a second or third language, it requires a lot of time, and it also requires money and a lot of patience, and this is something that a lot of the poor immigrants, as you mentioned, don't necessarily have access to.
I'm curious how the activists, because, you know, the other part of this bill obviously is the border security. You know, it would be fair to say that the Obama administration's record so far on deportations and kind of the get tough stuff to date has been horrifying or terrible. I'm curious what kind of things the activists are seeing develop on the security, on the get tough side that brings Republicans to the table, and, you know, what kind of concerns are there?
So what we've seen in the last few years, anytime immigration comes up, the net result of that has been increased enforcement. Without this sort of comprehensive bill, we've already had piecemeal legislation, which has increased enforcement both on the border and interior enforcement, right? So on the border, we're at net zero migration, so it's hard to sort of get lower than that. Yet there remains this focus about border security, which is it's a big contradiction. It doesn't recognize that, you know, when you're at net zero security, there's really not much more that you can actually do. And in terms of interior enforcement, as you mentioned, the Obama administration does have this dismal record, which will unfortunately be part of his legacy during the first term. You know, we're getting close to about 10% or so of undocumented people who are already some of the most politically vulnerable people in the United States who have already been deported. So when you think of it in that way, it is really troubling. Obama met with progressive and labor leaders yesterday. A lot of them were asking for him to sort of halt deportations as a goodwill gesture, right? Say, let's stop deportations until Congress does get something through. And Obama declined to do that, to the disappointment of a lot of the sort of progressive community. And there really seems to be no signal that that's going to stop anytime soon. And while the administration does like to tout that it has reported a record number of criminals, it also has conceded that it's deported a large number of people who are low-priority cases, people who were picked up perhaps for not making a complete stop, or were profiled for really doing nothing and sort of looking like an undocumented immigrant. So in other words, looking Latino. And they get caught up in the system and then face deportation as a consequence. So when you talk about one person who's faced that, that person generally has an entire family. A lot of times they're the breadwinner for an entire family. And so then that family is also involved in the consequences of this increased enforcement.
Yeah, I was really interested in the piece you wrote last week. I think it was last week or the week before, that was talking about sort of the distrust the activist community feels towards Obama, given all the things that you just mentioned. So maybe that's a good way to segue into talking about the politics of this, because there's lots of people that have to come to the table, right? It's the activist community and the immigrant community. It's, you know, the House and the Senate, and within that, the Democrats and the Republicans. It's the White House. You watched the hearings yesterday. Do you have any insight on how the politics are playing out at this point?
Yes. You know, 4 years ago, it was sort of unheard of for an undocumented immigrant to say, I want you to use my name, I want you to use personal details about me, and I want you to say that I'm undocumented. It's something that's really sort of shifted in the last 4 years, and I think that's come largely as a disappointment of the promises that Obama made around immigration, coupled with activist youth who really sort of took him on his word and then said, oh, we're not getting any changes, and we're going to sort of come out of the proverbial shadows, right? And what we saw yesterday during the hearing was that right before Daryl Issa was about to sort of question the first four panelists during the hearing, a group of 13 undocumented youth stood up and started chanting very loudly, undocumented, unafraid. So undocumented, unafraid has become the slogan for not just youth, but for undocumented people in general who want to expose their status and also say we are no longer afraid to make ourselves, insert ourselves in this debate. We are the ones who are most negatively affected by a broken immigration system, and we deserve to have our voices heard in any debate about policy that will continue to affect us. And so I spoke with a couple of the young men who participated in that hearing and in the protest. They're both two queer students who have graduated from college, have sort of tried to do everything as right as possible, and have both applied for deferred action under Obama's plan for undocumented youth, yet still feel like they're in this kind of limbo. They, if they're approved, which they think they will have this sort of two-year temporary status, but that doesn't give them any kind of permanent guarantee that they'll be able to stay here and contribute to the only place that they've ever called home, and it doesn't protect their parents. And most importantly, they both told me that they really want to emphasize that part of their platform, they have a three-point platform, which includes reducing enforcement on the border, but also includes this LGBT partnership recognition. Both of these youth identify as queer, and so they identify as undocu-queer, right? And so for them, they've had to kind of come out of two closets, one by saying that they're queer, and two by also recognizing and having society recognize them as undocumented. And so what they're saying is that it's very important for them and for their families to have this LGBT recognition. And this, again, is something that we would not have seen at a hearing or at any kind of political convention 4 years ago at all. People really were, you know, if people did talk, if an undocumented person did speak with a reporter, it was always under the premise of sort of changing their name or somehow otherwise obscuring their identity. And now there has been this shift in which they really, they feel like it's a much better gamble to explain who they are and demand to have a seat at the table.
So at the hearing yesterday, correct me if I'm wrong, but there were no, there were no kind of anti-immigration activists there, correct? Creating disturbances or passing out literature, or making their voices heard. And it seems like, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like one kind of advantage of, the pro-reform side is that they have people who are agitating for change. They have activists, they have organizations. And on the other side, while there is certainly a deeply held feelings among many Americans, particularly many white Americans in the South, that immigration reform would be a bad thing, there's not really a whole ton of actual political organizing or advocacy or anything like that. I mean, is that an accurate read of the landscape from your reporting? Or if not, you know, who are kind of the parallel forces on the other side pushing back?
Yes. So in terms of activist group, the Minutemen sort of disappeared. What we have in its place are think tanks like the Center for Immigration Studies, and one of the people who testified was Jessica Vaughn, who is not necessarily an activist and agitator in that way, but you have these sort of conservative, ultra-conservative think tanks that sort of insert this language around crime and aliens and illegality. But you're right, there isn't sort of any major kind of activist group that's taking the risk that these types of dreamers and other undocumented people are doing. They're not doing that right now. And I think that sort of echoes how people in the United States feel in general. Many people are ready to create some type of pathway for citizenship, right? More people support that than ever before in recent history, at least. And I think that the lack of sort of agitating and activism on that side is a reflection of that. There are sort of nativist protesters from time to time, but we've really seen that dwindle down in the last couple of years.
I think it's also interesting to look at the background to all of this in an economic perspective, because the last big push for comprehensive reform was when the economy was booming and people thought that that would help the cause, and then it failed. And now the second push is coming while the economy is still very, very weak, but it seems like perhaps there's beginning to be an understanding that immigration reform can actually be a good thing for the economy. It can help boost wages. It can be complementary to native-born workers' jobs, as well as create a lot of jobs for the native-born. And so I think I'm curious to know from your perspective if you think that that narrative is shifting and how much reformers are interested in pushing forward that different sort of viewpoint on how reform will impact the economy.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I've found it interesting that Republican reformers aren't sort of fighting the economy as much as one would think that they would, right? As you mentioned, a pathway to citizenship and legalization in general will boost the economy. When you have this sort of underclass of workers who face deplorable conditions in so many different types of sectors, they do decrease the wages for native-born workers. And I'm surprised that I haven't heard that from Republicans. Democrats are talking about that some more. Activists are not yet at that point in which they're really focusing on the economy too much. But again, I think that this is going to be a long debate, and we're going to see the issue of the economy, I believe, come up more and more in terms of the positive changes that reform can bring to the economy as a whole.
Just from watching the hearing yesterday, I mean, what's your kind of nickel take about whether the Republicans are yes or no? Are they gonna come around on a pathway to citizenship, or are they gonna find a way around this and just say no way?
This is the $1 million question, right? I was speaking with some activists a week or two ago, and they were telling me, well, they're going to make all this fanfare around immigration because they really don't want to deal with gun reform, and so this gives them something to sort of do in the meantime. I don't know whether I necessarily agree with that or not. I know that Republicans did recognize the power of the Latino vote, and Latino voters, of course, are very invested in this issue of immigration, whether or not they have somebody in their family who is undocumented. Most Latinos know somebody who is undocumented, and it's important to them to sort of find a way to include them in society. It's hard to say. I really don't know. I have a very mixed read from yesterday's House hearing, and I think we're going to have to wait and see how that might match up with what the Senate is saying.
Well, Aura, Bryce and I were both very excited to have you on this, and I hope that, I'm sure that as this year goes on and more things develop, we'll have you back to hash this all out again. But thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back next week with another Nation podcast.
Thank you.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.